Good evening. Test, test. All right, coming through. I think I'm coming through. Little things are bouncing around enough. Looks like I'm coming through. Good evening. This is Dietrich for the second in a row Friday edition of VNN Free Talk Live. It's January 26th. It's 9 p.m. We got some folks calling in tonight. I'm not exactly 100% sure if that's going to happen, so I'm going to leave that up, and I guess we'll call it a surprise guest. We'll do like Jeff did earlier this week. We had a pretty good edition of Free Talk Live on Monday night, despite some quite horrendous echo problems that we were able to diagnose over the week. Stan, myself, and, of course, Jeff. And we got things. Things appear to be hammered out quite well, actually. Of course, I say that. I might not even be broadcasting now. That's just how we're doing it. We're flying by the seat of our pants this week. But we're doing our best with bringing you white media, news without the Jew. News without the Jew, and we're cooking away. Every week gets better, I think, a little bit better for each individual host. Jeff's been doing Monday nights for a little while now, so he's got his technique down quite well. I'm glad to see. Tonight we're going to be talking about a few things. We're actually going to hit the death of diversity tonight. There were a couple academic papers published late last year that kind of flew under the radar in the mainstream media. And let's just say one of the articles written, the title was "Study Paints Bleak Picture of Ethnic Diversity." So, you know, that's got to be cool. Speaking of diversity, Tom Tancredo. Did you hear this? Tom Tancredo said something about how there shouldn't be a Congressional Black Caucus or any other other race based groups of lawmakers in the legislative bodies. Not quite sure what to think about that. I kind of reject the premise. You know, as long as we have to be under the same political system, which should be for as which that should end as soon as possible. But as long as we still are under the same system, we should we should be able to have the separate caucuses. But the only thing is that white folks should, of course, be able to have the same. And that's the problem, is that even mentioning that would get you cries from the Jewish media, and then once you complained about that, you'd be an anti-Semite then, wouldn't you? But other than the death of diversity, I have some news on Ahmadinejad, our my personal favorite world leader at the moment. He is having a lot of hard times. It looks like Big Jew has outmaneuvered Ahmadinejad in his own country. They've been able to pull the religious leadership and the slightly more pro-Western political leadership in Iran. They've been able to separate them from Ahmadinejad and blame a lot of the problems and unemployment and the like on Ahmadinejad, when it isn't quite his fault. Let's see, what else do we have? We've got Carter at Brandeis. Carter, Jimmy Carter he put in an appearance at Brandeis University, which is as Jewy as it sounds, and he actually sucked up to him. Jimmy Carter pretty much caved, and they patted his head for it, unfortunately. Got some Dick Warman news. Yeah, Richard Warman, remember him? He's the guy that likes to put people in jail for their political opinions. He put our brother Thomas Wynicke of London, Ontario, Canada, in jail because he didn't like Thomas reporting the news, and he didn't like his political opinions. So he put in a complaint and worked to have Wynicke thrown into jail. We're going to speak on that a little bit. I'm going to read the story for you. Oh yeah, did you hear about this on the 24th? A couple days ago, the Israeli president Moshe Katsav, I think is how you pronounce it, was indicted for rape. There were some charges last, I think it was October or November, and the charges have just gotten thicker and thicker, and more women have come forward, and it's just, it's not looking good. So they're asking him for to step down, and if you can imagine, I mean, God, Israel, a country just full of Jews in this, in a political scandal like that, just, it's all assholes and elbows, I'll tell you. And also, I got a few messages, PMs in the forum, and emails to through my blog, theseus.wordpress.com. And I invite you to either PM me on vnnforum.com or message me or hit the email link through my blog and ask me any questions or give me any feedback. Always like to hear from you. So I'll be answering some of those questions because it seems I wasn't clear on a couple things maybe that were in the broadcast last week. So we'll go over a little bit of stuff like that. It's pretty interesting stuff. And I'm glad the questions get asked because that's the only way we get feedback. And I know Jeff gets feedback. And it's, you know, whatever we can get, it's good stuff. And let's see, I wanted to make one more announcement here before... Before we get really going, there is a new radio show over at MajorityRights.com, and I know you're listening right now as Signet, and definitely look forward to hearing that. You just go to MajorityRights.com, hit the link there on the left, and definitely looking forward to hearing that. I don't really know anything about it yet, but he's a pretty cool guy, and sounds good. Sounds like good stuff. So right now, I'm going to spin a tune, and then we'll go just for a couple minutes, and we'll come back, and we'll get started. This is VNN's Free Talk Live, Friday Night Edition. All right, music by Tattooed Rednecks. This is Dietrich on Free Talk Live, the Friday Edition. Let's jump right in. At the top of the stack, we have Jimmy Carter at Brandeis University, knuckling under, going through the pit of vipers. I don't know. How would you do? I don't know. You'd definitely have to keep your drink in sight at all times, let's just say that. This was in Waltham, Massachusetts. Jimmy Carter's visit to Brandeis University this week was preceded by days of fresh controversy and recriminations. But when the former president came striding onto stage Tuesday, he played every part the Southern gentleman, charming the crowd of mostly Jewish students and winning a standing ovation in the end. Carter's visit came in the middle of a promotional tour for his new book, Palestine, Peace Not Apartheid, which has been attacked by anti-Israel, by many Jewish organizations and led to the resignation of many Jewish board members from the Carter Center at Emory University. When Carter stepped onto a makeshift stage in the sweat-stained gymnasium at Brandeis, yeah, I'm sure Jews sweat, he acknowledged the significance of his appearance at America's only non-denominational Jewish university in the midst of the battle over his book. Except for an invitation from the U.S. Congress to deliver my inaugural address almost 30 years ago, this is the most exciting invitation I've ever received, Carter says. So you can... He began sucking up as soon as he got to the mic, in other words. And he continues that it's almost gotten as much publicity. Perhaps the most surprising and telling moment came not with a confrontation, but with a concession Carter made when a student asked about a segment of his book in which he appeared to suggest that Palestinian terrorism is justified under current conditions. Carter retracted the sentence and apologized to students, saying, quote, "That sentence was worded in a completely improper and stupid way, for which I have to apologize. I have written the publishers to change that sentence immediately." So what that means for us is if you want the book, if you want the non-Jewed version, you better go run out and grab a copy before they reprint. Because he's already agreed to change at least at least one passage, and from what I've heard, there are several others that I haven't been able to confirm. But this is directly from the horse's mouth, this one at least. An hour after Carter ran off to catch his commercial flight back to Georgia, the same lectern was occupied by Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, a fervent defender of Israel who had offered to debate Carter at Brandeis. Dershowitz laid into the factual record in Carter's book, but he opened with a conciliatory gesture towards the former peanut farmer. Had he written a book which was similar to what he said from the stage, I do not believe there would have been much controversy. Hey, what do you know? We agree on something. This is not how the day was expected to unfold. Carter initially declined to speak at Brandeis when the offer was made contingent upon his debating Dershowitz. In interviews with the press, Carter said Brandeis had limited his freedom of speech. In the end, Carter was invited by an ad hoc committee of students and faculty sympathetic to his views. Sure. While Dershowitz was invited by a separate committee composed mostly of pro-Israel students. Among students and faculty, there was a great deal of grumbling about the rules set up for both appearances. The university banned posters and anything else that might have been used to protest while inside the venue. In addition, the questions for Carter were limited to 12 pre-screened queries from students, which many felt was an improper limit on debate. Quote, "This is a wonderful thing for the public relations of President Carter in his book," said Jonathan Sarna, a professor of Jewish history at Brandeis. "But it's somehow of a blow to our standards of academic integrity. It's not the way a university named for Louis Brandeis ought to be conducting itself." Yikes. Some students felt that the limit on questions was yet another way on which open discussion of the Middle East was limited on the Brandeis campus. I'm going to skip down a few paragraphs because this is a really good one. The protest section across the street never drew more than 100 people, and most of them were pro-Carter. The only people protesting Carter's visit were small contingents from the David Project, an Israeli advocacy group, and the Committee for Accuracy and Middle East Reporting in America, a pro-Israel monitoring organization known by its acronym CAMRA. Now, the reason this is important is because it's, well, first of all, it's the big lie in action. For Jews running an organization that, or Jews making up and indeed running an organization that is there to make sure that there's accurate reporting and media of the Middle East is laughable for all the reasons we already know about. But there's also a good lesson in there. And here you can see is how they operate. It's very disingenuous, but it's something to pay attention to, and it's something from which we can learn. They end run anything where they would be conceivably that would conceivably use to criticize them. Ah, there is a need, of course, for an organization that makes sure that there's accuracy in Middle Eastern reporting, right? Well, yes, there is, but it's because of Jews that there is this need, that there's a market out there for a group that criticizes news organizations. But no, I mean, that it's false opposition, basically, but it's important for us to be able to look at stuff like that and kind of know what's going on and see what's going on when it happens. But thought you might be interested in that. Jimmy Carter, knuckling under. But apparently it isn't enough. There was a write-up. Did you see this? There was a write-up at WorldNet Daily. I usually don't go to WorldNet Daily. But there was a write-up from, where's his name? I didn't get his name. Friedman from Tel Aviv, I think. Former President Jimmy Carter once complained there were too many Jews on the government's Holocaust Memorial Council. Right? This guy was the council's former executive director. And they told WorldNet Daily, Joe Farrow's outfit, in an exclusive interview. This guy's now a professor of law at Hofstra, and he was picked to be the chairman of this Holocaust Council by Eli Wiesel. And this was in 1980. But yeah, he said there were too many Jews on the Holocaust Holocaust Memorial Council. So they're pulling out the big guns against Jimmy Carter, it seems. Last week we talked about another big gun they had pulled out against Carter. Is apparently he wrote a 2-line memo asking that an accused former Nazi guard be given somewhat lenient treatment because he was like 90 years old or something, and that was the big deal, right? So that's what they've got on Jimmy. And you know, I've never been a fan of Carter, but you know, if you can live that long and be president, and you know, all people can say is that you know, there was like a rabbit thing that chased you, and you have a silly brother, and you said there were too many Jews on a Holocaust memorial thing. You're doing okay, you know. How old is Carter? He's got to be in his 70s or something. You know how old Jimmy Carter is? Yeah. Yeah, because you have to be a certain age to be, it's like 40 to be president. There's also an article, let's see, this came out this morning. UN Holocaust denial measure is aimed at Iran. Warning ahead of time, this is by Mark Perlman. Headline, or Dateline, United Nations. As part of its series of latest effort to ratchet up pressure against Iran and the United Nations, the Bush administration introduced a resolution this week condemning Holocaust denial. The UN General Assembly was expected to adopt the measure overwhelmingly. The resolution, tabled Monday, calls upon all member states to reject any denial of the Holocaust, warning that ignoring the historical fact of these terrible events increases the risk they will be repeated. Now, see, that's a problem I have with it. Where's the linkage? I know where the linkage is, but they will not admit it. The only linkage between the fact that Holocaust denial, or the only linkage between people saying that these accusations against Germans that are called the Holocaust and a Holocaust happening, quote, again, the only linkage there is the fact that Jews are lying, and maybe they deserve some type of recrimination. Really, that's the only logical, you know, actuator between those two. There's nothing else there, right? So I don't know. Unless somebody can hit me up on the Skype here. It's VNN Free Talk Live. But going on. Israel and most major Jewish groups threw their support behind the initiative, surprise, which will be presented to them by Israel and American officials, which was presented to them last week, and which had more than 72 sponsors as of Tuesday, including Russia, whose military sales to Tehran have unnerved officials in Washington and Jerusalem. That's not true. Turkey and Bosnia, two moderate Muslim-majority countries, also signed on as sponsors. The draft resolution, which condemns without any reservation any denial of the Holocaust, does not single out any specific country for criticism, but the obvious target is Iran, whose president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad had questioned the Holocaust repeatedly and hosted a conference late last year featuring renowned Holocaust deniers. The move is part of a multi-pronged strategy to isolate Iran on the world stage and in the Middle East, in addition to pushing for sanctions at the UN and for more aggressive inspections by the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, excuse me. Senior administration officials have warned Tehran to stop supporting and supplying militia groups in Iraq, Lebanon, and the Palestinian territory. Not all that's true. The administration also launched an effort to publicize Iran's past terrorist activities and the rhetorical outbursts of its president on Israel and the Holocaust. Early last month, Congress passed resolutions condemning Iran's decision to hold a conference on the Holocaust like it's their business, during which a number of revisionist theories have been aired. Later in the month, the UN Security Council passed a resolution imposing limited trade sanctions on Tehran for its refusal to suspend uranium enrichment. This past Monday, Iran barred 38 members of a UN nuclear inspection team from entering the country. No kidding. The American officials said the push for a new resolution was pegged on the UN's International Day of Commemoration and Memory of the Holocaust Victims, scheduled for January 27th. Several observers, however, said that the real goal was to put pressure on Iran, noting that the new measure is essentially a restatement of part of the broader resolution passed in November 2005 that established the UN's International Day of Commemoration and Memory of Victims of the Holocaust. And so basically, this is a political statement aimed at Iran. And what they're trying to do, and they're being quite successful at it, is isolating Iran. And we're going to talk about that later on as we go on. Let's see. I want to go over one more thing. The story about Katsav, Moshe Katsav, I think is how we want to pronounce that, right? Was considering whether to step down after the attorney general said he faced indictment on charges of rape and abuse of power. The most serious charges ever leveled at a top Israeli official. Katsav's lawyers were defiant in the hours after the dramatic Justice Ministry announcement Tuesday, but Katsav was planning a news conference later Wednesday, and the Israeli media were speculating that he would suggest a temporary leave from the post. Well, he did. He did end up getting a temporary leave from his post, and he left flanked with his wife smiling. So it's a lot like the Bill Clinton thing all over again, it seems. The allegation that Katsav used his position as Israel's ceremonial head of state, a job... Let's see, I have a call. Hang on 1 second, caller. Hang on 1 second, caller. The allegation that Katsav used his position as Israel's ceremonial head of state, a job supposed to serve as the nation's moral compass, to force himself on his female employees, left the nation reeling. It's a sad day for the state of Israel, said lawmaker Billy Elon, who called on Katsav to resign to spare the nation further trauma. But Katsav gave no indication that he was preparing to step down, despite a wave of demands that he quit. Hello, you're on Friday Night Free Talk Live. Who is this?
This is Crypto.
It's Crypto. I had a feeling you'd be calling in. Hello, I heard your appearance on Monday. It was a little bit of technical problems going on at VNN at the time. So
yeah.
Yeah, so did you hear yourself? How do you think you did?
I didn't like it. You know, I never called into a talk radio show ever. So, you know, many people feel uncomfortable with how they sound on the radio. It just kind of made me wince, you know. And also I was kind of angry and it took me out of character. So I didn't like it very much, but hopefully this will be an improvement.
So it took you out of character when they asked, or it got you angry and stuff when they asked if you were a prostitute.
Yeah.
So are you a prostitute?
No, I'm not. I've never been. I've never been arrested for anything, not even a traffic violation.
You can be a prostitute without getting caught.
But it wouldn't take away from my answer.
Okay, all right. So you've never been a prostitute. Why didn't you say that?
I felt like it was a violation. I felt like that's an improper question to ask a woman, period, and then to ask a woman on a political show. And also, you know, in the forums in the past, I've answered the question, but it seems like I said no, flat out, but it no one listened and just kept talking over it. And so I realized that they didn't want an answer, they just wanted an opportunity to disrupt. And so I felt like every time the question is asked, the intention is not a sincere query, it's designed to disrupt. So So I didn't want to answer the question and allow that violation to continue. But then, you know, talking to people throughout the week, they were like, just answer one last time and then never bring it up again. And if they, you know, if it comes up again, you know, remind them it's been answered and then that's that. And then I was sort of throwing an internal tantrum by saying I'm not going to answer either way, but I'll just answer this time.
All righty. I know, even right now, I've got, as soon as I brought you on, I get this message, ask her if she's a prostitute. Well, I did, and she answered it. So, have you been...
And ask her this, you can see what the intention is, really. Since they have the answer, let's see.
Well,
you know, if it was because I wanted to ask or because I wanted to disrupt, and I think you'll see that it was just designed to disrupt. They didn't want an answer they heard before.
I don't know. I mean, Alex, I don't know about Jeff, per se. But,
I mean, the person that asked the question, you know, whoever called in or
what. Well, I think Alex did, but, you know, he doesn't read the forum a lot of times, so.
Alex asked the question?
I don't know. I don't want to.
I thought it was just like a random person from the forum. If it had been Alex that asked the question, I probably would have just answered this way.
Yeah.
I felt like it was, to the best of my knowledge, it wasn't coming from anybody, you know, reputable. It came from an anonymous source. So that right there, so it was probably one of the lurkers that are just trying to cause trouble. So it was somebody that you could even identify that asked. That would be reasonable, but an anonymous source asks a stupid question that it's not serious.
All right. Well, let's talk about something serious then.
Real.
Yeah.
Like what you just mentioned, destroying Israel. That's unfortunate because they have so many issues in the public with sex trafficking. They have a leader that's raping women.
Oh, so you guys know about that. Now, see, they were asking some other questions that were actually interesting, I think, but the technical problems kind of stood in the way of that. And,
yeah.
And you guys
couldn't hear much.
Yeah, and I talked to Jeff later in the week, and Stan Sikorsky and myself, we were helping Jeff diagnose it and stuff like that, and it was really, I don't see how you guys went that long. It was so annoying that...
It was unreal. I couldn't hear myself think. And you know what? Honestly, after listening to it, because somebody called me later that night and sent me the show, and I was mortified by that night because I realized that I answered questions that weren't asked. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, there was so much double layering of conversation that I was hearing things that and I was misanswering questions that weren't even asked. And then I was hearing things that didn't happen. Then I didn't know who was speaking. It was horrible.
Right. Well, they did ask one good question. They asked a few good questions, but there were technical snafus that were in the way. And one of them, I think, that you guys were off on trying to get into a little bit was about black nationalists. And they were saying, or I think Alex was asking you to tell us something about blacks that we don't know, or like black nationalists or something like that. But what? So black nationalists know about like Israeli sex trafficking and stuff like that?
Well, all that stuff is in the news. I mean, that's just like if you read the headlines every day, you know, that's been a common issue with Israel for a long time, the sex trafficking. And the numbers coming out of there are substantially higher than much larger countries. So, yeah, that's kind of like, CNN-type news. You know what I mean? You don't have to dig far to find out they have issues with that.
Well, no, you don't. But I know I would say, like, most, like, your average white person doesn't, you know, connect those things at all, or they don't. You know, I mean, because it's one thing to say, well, there were sex traffickers busted in Israel, and it's another thing to understand the historical implications that Jews have always been involved in the slave trade.
Right. Well, you know what it is also? Perspective is a funny thing, and I've been involved with nationalism for well over a decade. So when I listen to the news, I'm listening with a different slant, and my perspective is looking at Israel with a I'm scrutinizing them maybe a little more than the average listener when I listen to the news. So I'm aware of some things that maybe other people aren't, but I don't want to say that because I don't know.
Yeah. Now, about Israel, I know nationalists who, and this is pretty goofy in my opinion, but I know nationalists who look up to Israel and they say, you know, that's what we got to do. That's the good stuff, right? You know, they have a blood and soil type nation, and they're building walls, and they, you know, they're... that's what we want to do. And you know, maybe so. Maybe yeah, we do want to.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with admiring the model.
Yeah, yeah. There's a difference between the model and the hypocrisy of what the same damn people are doing over here.
But you don't have to practice that part. You can sort of practice the filter. Like, okay, we're going to admire the model of how the government is set up and then filter out and not be sex traffickers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can pluck some things. And actually, we're a little bit richer, all of us, if we can pluck a few different things from other cultures and apply it to ours. If you don't want to, that's fine. But then, you know, your scope of growth is going to be limited. I think there's something to learn from everyone.
Well, maybe so. I mean the Romans... I look at the Roman model. They barely made up anything of their own, but they did a great job implementing mostly Greek. It was mostly Greek, but yeah. I mean,
do you really feel like the Romans didn't do anything innovative on their own?
Hardly anything. What would you say? I'll tell you where they got it from.
You know, not that I'm, you know, have any respect for raping and pillaging, but nobody does it like them. I mean, if look at all the land they acquire. That's. I mean, it's not a highly moral, you know, trait to be admired, but it's quite effective if you want to take over the world.
Well, okay, all right. Maybe you have something there. I mean, for most of history up until then, a battle meant two opposing sides standing on opposite hillsides, and 9 times out of 10, it was who could hold their line the longest before the other guys ran away. There wasn't actually that much killing in wars, in battle, but the Romans positively butchered their way across the areas they conquered. They held their line, and they absolutely butchered their way through their enemies, which, you know, that's something they pretty much made up.
Yeah, they got murder and mayhem on lock. They did it. I mean, they did it well. It's not admirable. I wouldn't want to see people, you know, doing that too often. But if we're going to say that every culture has something you can learn from, if you want to take over the world, you know, look to the Romans a little bit.
Well,
yeah,
Yeah, I learned this from the Jews. You know, murder works. Murder works.
Well, you know, I don't personally advocate it because there's many different paths to the same summit. You can achieve the same thing with many different ways. Not using murder is going to take more thought and careful planning and intellect, but in the end, it's more effective. If you just want to get to the summit real fast, you know, you murder and mayhem, you know what I mean? But I don't advocate murder or enslavement or, you know, holding down anybody else to achieve my own success, because that success will be temporary too.
Well, what do you think about stuff like, you're a separatist, right?
I definitely believe we need our own government. You can't have somebody that's in opposition to you caring for you. You're right. That, you know, you can't. We need our own government. Also, I feel like different peoples have different attributes. I think Africans need a strong hand. The snitching system we have set up in the U.S. government, they get one person, and how they get more people is through snitching and manipulation. That doesn't work on Africans. Maybe we need a police force that's, you know, how do I say it?
No,
doing it differently. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I studied a lot of anthropology. I studied a lot of cultures, and a lot of when you study tribes and band type cultures, you're in Africa a lot of the time, and their political system is they've got the big man political system. And what sucks is that nothing ends up working, because you have this system created for and by Europeans, and all of a sudden it gets corrupted and they want to turn it into a multi-cult, and what you end up is the worst of all worlds.
Yes, exactly. And the whole teaching people multiculturalism is ideal. There's also the silent implication that embracing your own identity or your individual culture becomes wrong. But when you do that, you strip people of their sense of pride, and you have all these youths with low self-esteem because they can't even embrace their own race. I'm speaking about white children. It's really unfortunate because they're not able to publicly be proud and be white. You know, then there's a lot of self-esteem issues that come from that. The rise in anxiety medications and all of this could have something to do with multiculturalism and the effect it has on people when you're not allowed to be proud of who you are.
Well, that kind of ties into our death of diversity segment. So let me go ahead and kick it off. There was this came out late last year. It flew way under the radar as far as the popular media goes. Surprise, surprise. But it was a study done at Wake Forest University, and it found that adolescents get daily happiness boosts of daily happiness from ethnic identity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it says,
yes.
Ethnic pride can help teenagers maintain happiness when faced with stress, according to a new study from Wake Forest. And it was published in Child Development, which is a journal. Adolescents with positive feelings toward their ethnic group say they are happier on a daily basis than those who have a more negative attitude about their ethnic identity. The study involved 415 ninth graders from Chinese and Mexican backgrounds. Gee, isn't that interesting? They couldn't find any white kids for this.
That's funny, because I was thinking they were talking about white children. Because it seems like the white children are the ones that are really not allowed to embrace who they are. You know what I mean? Or Asians, they could fall in that group, too. It's like Hispanics are allowed to, yeah, Hispanic pride, yay. Black, of course, black pride, yay.
Well, it used to be different with blacks. Blacks have gone through several phases, though. In the 60s, it was way more like that. Blacks were able to identify as black, and then they were beginning to actually assert some of their own, I don't know. I mean, it's anytime you have a leader, black nationalist leader, preaching separation, they get gunned down. And they get destroyed.
And their name gets dirtied up, so nobody listens to anything they have to say ever again. They do something to discredit them so they can never be heard.
I mean, who are you talking about with discrediting? I mean, usually they just kill them.
Yes, good and valid point.
I mean, they discredit them by killing. I don't know. I mean, but... Yeah.
I mean, look at all the things they said about Malcolm, and Malcolm led an upstanding life. I mean, considering your average politician, he led an upstanding life. But they would pick every little tiny little thing, and that overrode his message.
Well, didn't he? Wasn't he like a male prostitute for Whitey when he was a kid?
You see what I mean?
What?
Believe that?
Didn't he honestly say that in his autobiography? I think he said that. Come on.
A male prostitute?
Well, you
never.
Used to give hand.
He was a drug dealer. He was involved in the drug trade, and then he was a booker. He ran the numbers back in Harlem. They used to have number runners,
right.
And he was involved with that. Those were his only sources of income in his hustling days. So where did prostitute come? I don't. It doesn't even mention him knowing a prostitute or speaking.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yes, he had an ex that became a prostitute, an ex girlfriend. So where did that come from?
You might know better than me. I'll have to look it up. I'll have to look it up and mention it.
I've read that autobiography many times. That is what turned me into nationalism, I can assure you.
Really?
He doesn't say that.
Really?
Yes. Malcolm is the reason I'm here.
Really? See, because I like Malcolm X because he at least at first, he preached separatism.
Yes.
He didn't preach any of this. And see, my problem with it is we've got corrupt people.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere,
yeah.
You've got
our leaders are being chosen for us.
Yes, that's exactly it. I guess you probably
by the opposition.
Yeah, you've probably read something. Yeah, they're choosing these absolute, and I use the term clowns very often.
Yep.
That's exactly what they
are.
Look
with
at
that.
Jesse and Al are absolute clowns. They're coons. I mean, they're such fucking coons. Like, it's the same thing with our politicians who populate Washington, D.C. They choose the absolute, just they're jackasses. I mean, they are. They're
almost
clowns.
Chosen for entertainment.
Serious.
Almost chosen for entertainment, bordering on comedy.
Yeah, it's like, who chose Al Sharpton? Somebody that's, I think a racist chose him to look ridiculous. I mean, that would be my guess. I mean, he displays the worst. I mean, he's very impressed with himself when he rhymes, for crying out loud.
Well, we've heard. It seems like we have. We were taught we do it in this democratic system. We have something of a say. But after this last election with Bush and none of us voting for him and him still being president somehow, we now are aware that our leaders are being chosen for us completely. Like, we have absolutely no say. It's important that we get the leaders that we chose to the front. But how?
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, murder works.
But, no, okay. That's the short path, but it's a temporary solution.
Well, I don't. I'm not. Look, I'm not advocating anything, or at least I should say that. But there's really not gonna. I haven't heard a better way that somebody has come up with that we can pry the Jews' hands out. You know, they're so deeply ingrained and rooted into this system. They're not going to give it up without a fight. I mean,
but they're not going to give it up. I don't think that the goal. I don't think that it's possible to take one group in America and pluck. That's like plucking out pieces of pepper and sand. You know what I mean? It's going to be impossible to do that. I think that the only practical solution is to start setting up separate nations out of America. Because America is just going to stay in melting. When it's a melting pot, you melt something in a pot, you're not going to be able to pick that element out easily. Period. Probably ever. And that's what America now is. So it might be more prudent for us to start looking at outside nations and other than America to start establishing separate space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I know what you mean, but it's not exactly going to leave any of us alone. You know, if people of goodwill went to, say, Liberia and set up things there, and if white nationalists went back to countries in Europe and helped the situation there and raised their children there, the Kwa's, it ain't exactly like they're going to leave you alone. They're going to come after you. You know, this thing needs to be stopped. And it's more about our parents and our grandparents and great-grandparents. They should have stopped it. But in a way, we're culpable for this thing that goes around killing everybody. And that it's scary, but it is. It is up to us. We're not going to...
But I don't know how I can practically...
Yeah.
How to extricate one, you know, group out of America. I don't see how that can practically be in... You know, devil's advocate for a minute. The Jews are a danger to whites, but the Jews are a benefit to Jews. So, you know what I mean? Or maybe a benefit to Asians. So to say this group is not good for me, they have to go when there's like 15 other cultures in America, maybe it's better for that group that wants isolation to go.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, I have several problems with that. First of all, let me just say, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I am leaving. I am immigrating out of this country,
that's my intention.
Yeah, within the next year, actually, I'm doing it under the guise of graduate school. But I'm actually leaving. This place is getting downright scary, and the way I characterize it is that this thing has all the marks of. A country that's about to make a move on its citizens. You've got all these. Now you have to have a passport to go to Canada now, and you have to have permission to come and go.
Oh, for real?
Oh yeah.
To Canada?
That
Are you
started,
sure?
Yeah,
that was just in Canada like 2 years ago.
Yeah,
that
it started the other day. As a matter of fact, it started out here last week. Yeah. But
it is getting bad, huh? We can't get out of here. No way.
Well, I mean, you know, and the cameras are going up, and I mean, they've got it like that in Europe, too. I mean,
that's scary.
It is scary.
Well, that's not where I'm going to go. I intend to retire in the West Indies peacefully on a beach with no phone. I don't want to stay here either. And there's a lot of people that have that outlook. I have a lot of friends that are like, I'm saving up to leave America.
Yeah, I find, are they your more educated friends?
Well, all my friends are educated. People tend to travel in the circles like they grew up in, and all my friends are, you know.
Oh, speaking of that.
They at least have my...
Speaking of that, not to change subjects too abruptly, but you told a whopper, I think, on Monday night.
I'm going to bring this up here.
Hang on. You said that most blacks were well-educated, and you are an average black, and you're not. Neither of those are true. Look, hey, save it for someone who wasn't born and raised in the Carolinas, okay? High school was 50-50, so you're not going to get that past me, all right?
But you have to realize that you travel in circles that are like, you know, when I went to private school right through high school.
Right.
So imagine the black kids that I'm going to be traveling in the circles of. Imagine the black kids I went to church with.
But that doesn't mean the average black.
But for me, that's average. And for any other black born in that class, that's average. Now, if you're black and you're born in the ghetto, then that's average. If you're a Cosby kid, then that's average. You know what I mean? So it's average is based on what is your environment. So I think that white people want to pretend that there's not a lot of affluent blacks. There's a lot. And it's enough to make it average for some blacks. There are blacks that never meet poor blacks now.
Hang on. There's no such thing. There's no, you know, it's an average for well-to-do blacks. Well, I'm talking about
how the
general population of blacks, or about 12.7% of the population, out of those, half of them have a legal record. You know, I mean, they're the rates of AIDS and violent crime and all this other shit is way higher than these other populations.
Okay, right, now so I can only I'm not looking at the stats on that, but I can go ahead and give you my opinion. Because the police profile, pull over and search every black person they smell. That's how come there's a higher criminal rate.
Have you smelled black people lately?
Huh?
Have you smelled black people lately?
No, but you know, I'm being facetious. But basically, I'm saying, for instance, if a black kid is stopped and he's smoking a joint, walking down the street,
yeah,
guarantee that's going on the record.
Yeah.
If it happens to a frat boy, okay, I don't want to mess up his record. I'm going to warn him this
I'll
time.
I'll tell you why. That
if
is.
You add up how many times that happens, it will skew the stats on crime.
Yeah, but not that much. Not that
yeah,
much.
That much.
No way.
If it happens every black kid goes to jail under that, and then half of the white kids don't, in a country with 8 million, you know, or a city, I'm saying here, 8 million, that's tremendous. We're talking about 2 million crimes that didn't go on the record.
Yeah.
When if they were black, it would have.
That doesn't put, you know, you're talking about walking down the street.
Just an example.
Smoking a joint. Yeah, but, well, first of all,
the black kid's going to get a warning, and the black kid's going to go directly to jail.
Well, first of
and
all,
and then he's going to wind up on parole.
Yeah. First of all, the reason why that is because you, when you're on a college campus, they do everything they can to keep. That's why they have. That's part of the reason why they have.
No, I don't mean on the college campus. I just mean walking down the street.
Right, but I just wanted to make that point that they really. That they do that on college campus. I don't know why. Anyway, I had a question from the forum that I'm not sure. I'll mention it. But sure. If you want to answer, go ahead. It says, ask her if she thinks blacks can invent or progress without whites.
I'll give you my answer. It's just we're acknowledging that society is just recent that we're all being mixed, right? So progression would obviously have happened if we're still here, right? So that's a ridiculous question. We would have stopped at the Garden of Eden if we were incapable of progression without whites. That's silly. Can we go to something that's not silly? How could we have not progressed since the beginning? That makes no sense. Do you see what I mean?
Well, first of all, the Garden of Eden.
These kids are scrapping for self-esteem. Honestly, with questions like that, I see a kid scrapping for self-esteem. I wish he was allowed to be proud and white when he was young so he wouldn't be scrapping for self-esteem now, convincing himself black people can't invent. He needs some pride.
Well, I have a couple answers there. First of all, the Garden of Eden was a founding myth, all right? So it didn't happen.
I'm joking about the Garden of Eden.
All right.
There's only two people there.
But actually, you know, there is the case to be made that blacks didn't progress because they're still in Africa. They are the if you subscribe to the
Being in Africa by default is no progression.
Well, it's never looking over the horizon and taking your chances.
Huh? How could being in the continent of Africa up until now indicate a lack of progression? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, look at it.
Look at what?
Look at Africa.
Existing,
what do you mean, how can I say
in Africa up until now would prove progression. They've existed all this time. How could Africa be here if there has never been a progression since the beginning of time? How could there be any inhabitants? That doesn't make sense.
Oh, it does. But this is the way I would answer it. And I'm kind of a diplomat, but not, and I'm going to get totally wailed on. But
well, you don't
I don't think.
Here.
I'm sorry?
Well, you go diplomat you.
Well, my point is it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't.
favorite point, too.
It really doesn't matter.
Let's focus on today. Let's focus on today. Honestly, because you know what? Honestly, when I hear the story about Africans in the bush, I'm wondering, why aren't they focused on Europeans and the Jewish question? It seems like...
Or the Jewish answer.
Well, it seems like, you know, if you need a self-esteem boost, go look in the mirror and tell yourself you're special and then focus on the Jewish question. Because looking to Africans in the bush ain't going to help you. It's not going to help you. And that's why I'm wondering, why is there so much focus on things that are completely irrelevant?
I think it has a lot to do with the tradition of what or the history of what's called white nationalism. And
has Africans in the bush affected by that at all?
Well,
you know what I mean? It's like white Christians would be better off focusing on white.
Yeah. No, you're right, though. I mean, we're better off focusing on the political situation, the Jew. My
mm-hmm.
point is this, and I repeat this over and over, and if you're sick of hearing it, I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it again. Most white nationalists will agree with me that blacks are... you know, just like in the protocols of the Elders of Zion, that they admit that they have caused enmity between the races for 20 centuries. And,
yeah.
Right. But most white nationalists would agree at the drop of a hat that the problem isn't blacks. All white nationalists know that. You'll hear Alex say it 10 times in Goyfire, even during the height of the TNB section. He says... It isn't this, you know, blacks are a known entity, it's the Jew, you know, and that's the way I put it is that blacks are a club that the Jew uses to beat us over the head, right? And these people are like wounded dogs getting mad at the club.
I see. That's a good analogy.
What would you rather do?
Listen, I wouldn't say that's all white nationalists. Alex is maybe a little more evolved, a little more red. There are many that are just go wee-ha, and we're, you know, and that are focused on that and refusing to look at what you're saying here. So
I don't
those
think
are.
So. You know what? When I use that analogy, they either don't respond at all. They either go away, or they admit that it's kind of a good point. I don't know. I mean, that's definitely the way I think about it. I think that we should work with nationalists of all stripe, except for the Jewish stripe. I definitely think no Jews just right is rule one. You know, it's the
so
first
look, we're trying to get
the
ourselves
first rule
out
of Fight Club is no Jews just right. No Jews, right? Because
right.
They are always pursuing this evolutionary strategy.
They admit to pitting us against each other. Why do we want them there? They admit to pitting us against each other.
Yeah, like we can't know how it would be otherwise. But my point is on the question of if blacks can progress without whites, why does it matter to whites?
Thank you.
Why does it matter for our political situation?
Why are you focusing on that instead of bettering yourself? And I said that about 100 million times and nobody's listening.
The white nationalist criticism of blacks is that they're stupid and violent. Okay.
Why would you care if you thought that, right, and then you would neglect helping your own people progress to focus on that? That's stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What I'm saying is you can...
Because every moment that you spend thinking about ways to insult an African is a moment you didn't benefit your people.
Well,
why spend time finding retarded pictures? You know what I mean? You know the stuff we've seen on the forums.
See the stereopigia.
Yeah.
Oh,
even the bait threads once in a while, okay, that's kind of cute and funny. But when you take a bait thread and then try to turn it into how to insult somebody else, go help your people.
The point is this. The point is this, and I think it's preaching to the choir. But this is the point. What they're trying to say is that these people are different from us in body and mind. Hang on. In body and mind. And what that implies is that there's no way in hell we should be under the same political system. I say, okay, I agree with
that's
you,
right.
But that doesn't necessarily, I mean, okay, but if you, it doesn't actually address then what's causing that, you know? Here's another analogy. They say letting blacks into the general population is like letting rabid dogs go. It's like, okay, but what are you going to do? Are you going to file charges against the rabid dogs? No, they're a known entity. You're going to find the person who let them out, and find the person who sicked them on us, is the way that Linder puts it. And I think it's quite apt, because if you look at black pop culture, it's almost exactly that. And the shit is almost uniformly founded and nurtured by Jews. You look at all these gangster rap labels, and that's something that I do appreciate black nationalists for, is that they're against that shit. They're against drugs and, the gangster rap bozo look with the giant baby look with the jeans and around your ankles and stuff. I mean, you know, say what you want about fashion, black nationalists have it right. That does look stupid, and no one's going to respect you like that.
Here's my opinion. Anyone that's not a teenager thinks teenagers of that time look stupid, because young people are trying to rebel and doing what the older, people are not. So that's every generation that's like that. But can I give you a good example about Jews sicking us essentially on you? And I'll give you just one example. I'm not going to say that I believe that's the case all the time, but I have seen it. And for instance, the Jews set these laws up encouraging profiling and the police to do unfair things to blacks. Well, the police officers that will enforce that law will be white. The backlash from the black people will be upon who?
Yeah.
And who set those ridiculous laws? So,
well, it's not the laws. The laws are designed. This ties into the fact that we shouldn't be under the same political system, because
exactly.
A political and a legal system that's designed for one type of one race isn't going to work necessarily for the other race.
Right.
Yeah, and the truth,
I agree.
And the way it looks is that it just absolutely doesn't work. I mean, no
right.
one can really point to
chaos.
A successful. Model of that happening. But what they're trying to do is put a square peg into a round hole, saying, oh, blacks can be white. Well, first of all, no, they can't. Second of all, blacks don't want to be white.
Bingo.
They don't want to be.
Bingo. We want to be ourselves.
It's imperialistic, and it's a part of our it's almost like it's that Puritan proselytizing thing that turns into imperialism as it goes more secular. That oh, you can be just like me. Well, they don't want to be just like you, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then if you don't want to be like me, then I'll force you with the threat of death, you know. I'll take away your freedom if you won't be like me. Or that it just gets ridiculous. So yeah, we need our own government.
Yeah. Man, I am getting shit hammered in the forum. Let me read some of this. It's hysterical. I mean, people are still listening, and I'm glad. But, oh well. I mean, let's see. Malcolm X was a piece of shit.
You see, that's real bright. Now, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep reading them like that. That'll help us. Okay.
I think crypto has the hots for them. Hold on to your wallet. Yeah, they'd be sweet on each other. When's Linder going to come on and end this Pat Buchanan, Azola Foster, conservative circle jerk? Oh, man.
Is there anything that's not retarded?
I don't know. Let's see. I'm hearing the same thing. She likes white meat. Somebody should tell her reform school is not private. What the hell is this? The Pimp Daddy and Crypto Whore Show? Question, what do you call a black kid?
How about just read the smart ones?
I'm
sorry, go ahead. Is any about politics, though?
Let's see, please. Hey, I like hearing a black nationalist on here, but yeah, it's running a bit long. She knows damn well that she's much smarter than the average Negroid. She's no doubt a light mix. Can't blame her for fighting for her kind. Loyalty is
100% black. Let's get that out.
Really? Because you know your pictures are quite light.
I've explained that in the Avatar picture, there was this floodlight or glare light or whatever, and it was too bright because I always photograph too dark, and so in that shoot those pictures were too bright. Not that I'm tremendously different, but I'm not that light. I've said that before. And I'm 100% black.
So you're 100% African.
100% half Haitian, half Trini. No white in the family line. Trust me, if there was, it would
not be. You don't have to be 100%. You don't have to be part white. But I did have one good question from Cowboy Zeke, actually. I didn't get all the way down the forum, but this popped up from Cowboy Zeke, and I thought it was a good question. He says, first, I would like to thank Crypto for coming on, and I would like to ask her if a mixture of reparations and repatriation would work. I believe a plan which uses free energy and the most educated and group-conscious black nationalists and in positions of power would work for a new type of Liberia.
That's an intelligent... Now, that was... That's impressive. I don't think that reparations are necessary. I think that at this point, there's enough black entrepreneurs that can do the investment project on their own. If we can just, you know, get people out of there and agree to give up government, we'll handle it from there. I don't think we need reparations. And also, that's unfair for, you know, three generations later, you're going to pay out of your pocket for what great-grandma did. You may not have even liked her if you knew her.
Well, then I'll say this.
No. I don't think the reparations are fair.
The vast majority of whites did not have slaves. Slaves in today's money were $40,000 apiece, and when you had...
Well, if you were in the South, you had slaves, or you were an overseer. You had to.
No, I've done my family tree and looked all around. And
so what did they do for a living if they had nothing to do with the cotton trade in the South in that era? What
they
did
were
they
farmers.
Do?
They were
what did they farm?
It's like, I don't know what exactly they farmed, but they were farmers.
Cotton?
They had small...
With black people?
They were subsistence farmers. Nah, we didn't have anything. They were dirt farmers. I mean, they didn't have anything. I mean, they were all carpenters and farmers. They were subsistence farmers, and they helped build churches. And that was it. They were carpenters. My dad's a carpenter. I'm the first non-carpenter as far as I can trace my family tree back on one side. Back to like the late 1500s or something like that.
Well, but, I mean, I will acknowledge that there were some white people that were just rather against slavery, and they were loud about it for a long time in that era. But, you know, I would say in the South, the majority of whites had slaves or were in the position of being an overseer, which is essentially one step up the road slave. So they were slaves or they had slaves?
No, you'd be wrong. I've studied it. But,
I could be wrong because I don't know, and I haven't researched this. So I'll be honest and say I don't know. I have not really researched. I'm speculating.
Yeah, slaves in today's money were $40,000 apiece, and they had the average number of slaves were I think it was like eight to twelve, and many had a lot more. So you can imagine how many people are there walking around with 8 to 12 car garages, you know, if you say $40,000 for a car that you could buy, like a basic car. So how many people do you know with that many car garages, or even half that many? So, you know, I mean, that's a rather thin slice of the population. I mean, there are, you know, gated community types with that, but that's what you would find. So yeah, most whites didn't own slaves, and I
honestly don't know.
It was dumb.
I had always assumed that was the case because white people didn't make a big... When white people want to deny something and then they actually have a leg to stand on, they are loud about it. So I would think that white people would have been really vocal about most white people didn't have slaves in the South if that could be substantiated.
Well, most white people don't know their history. They don't know their family tree. I mean, I hear... You know, there are people that I'm on college campuses all day, and I get to speak with a lot of like undergraduates, and none of them know. None of them are culturally aware. Forget racially aware. They're completely without any type of understanding of where they came from.
And that's as unfortunate as the African slaves that were ripped of their history. It's happening to y'all too.
Oh, it's past that. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And I've never seen it that way.
Well, it absolutely. Well, you know, you can learn a lot like stuff. I would say for any white racialist, no matter where you come down on the issue of Africans, reading there's a good book, Exchanging Our Country Marks, and that's an excellent book that I would just recommend to anyone and everyone. And it's about the slave trade. He uses. It's kind of cool because coming from South Carolina, Charleston was one of the main ports where they brought slaves in, Charleston and Boston. By the
way, we talked about this before.
Charleston and Boston also have the two oldest synagogues in the country, by the way.
Really?
Yes, really. So I wonder why that is.
Why? No, I want to know why. Oh, because they were...
To be fair, but it certainly appears that way. And we know that Jews were financing the slave trade, but...
You know, they like synagogues.
Yeah, they do. Synagogues are
together.
That's sort of the conspiratorial planning, I guess, goes down. I mean, have you ever been inside of a synagogue?
Actually, let me think. Yes. Because I minored in theology, and I took it upon myself to go around to every place of worship that I could find and check it out at least once, and I did.
Really?
It's nothing special.
When did you...
It looks like a regular Baptist church or something.
When did you...
Well, they got the candles and stuff, right? Sorry, go ahead.
When did you go Jew-wise? Do you remember? I mean, it's not been that long for
me. I come from a family of, I don't know if you want to say black nationalists, but very Afrocentric or very African pride. Very, very, very. So it was, I heard from very early. And then, I'll just leave it at that.
Really? So, okay, so your parents helped you out.
Right. But my grandparents also. Just from the very beginning, I've always had. And we're allowed to. That's the other thing. It's like when I was growing up, you were allowed to like be Black Pride and go to the Nation of Islam meetings or whatever without, you know, running undercover like you would if you went to something for white nationalists. So it's a little different.
Yeah, there aren't any anti-groups firebombing Black nationalists, but I will say that it's definitely going less vogue, let's say. The media does pound Black racialists these days.
But I don't know if I wouldn't call my family so much racialist or nationalist in the sense of, you know, I don't like this group, but they're just very much about African pride. And I constantly, you know, was when I was old enough to vote, it was like pounded in my head to vote for Black people. I started to, you know, buck back a little bit when it was, you know, I felt like I was being told to just vote based on color, which isn't right. I want to know the positions they stand on. But I was always told to just support Black people really strongly, though. So.
Yeah, and that's accepted in that community. And white people never been able to do that.
Never been applauded. I tell you, it's unfortunate. I really think that's not fair. We're catching a trickle-down when these kids ain't got pride.
Yeah, I think so. What are you saying, that that's where, like, the anger comes from?
Yes. It comes from, I'm not allowed to be proud to be white, and you are allowed to be proud to be Black, and I'm so angry at you. But we aren't the ones that made those. You know what I mean?
It's a few
things. We didn't drive that.
It's a few things.
I think that's one of them.
A few things. And one of them is just the fact that between differences of people, there are unavoidable misunderstandings. And, and by misunderstandings, I mean white people, on last week's show, there was this, like, pimp daddy in a pink hat and a chartreuse coat or something And you know, that's just ridiculous to us, right? And that's funny. And we laugh at that the same way maybe Northerners would laugh about Southerners. And I know y'all do that. But
y'all think we do that? Y'all think we do? Oh, I've got a paranoid one that's a better half, too. He's picking on the South. We do not pick on the South like y'all think we do.
Oh, please.
No.
Hush, go away. No.
I've never, in fact, I was always one, Southern men are so hot, you gotta get one with a country body. I've always said things like that, and nobody's ever looked down on it. So that whole viewpoint of Southerners me and my girlfriends have always said that, like, the Southern guys are just perfect gentlemen and just always good things. Where do you guys get this "we're bashing Southerners" from? I've never heard it.
Oh, no, I have friends that, well, first of all, Yankees are always coming down here saying, oh, y'all talk slow and you, this is how we do it up north and all that bullshit. But, okay, well, hey.
Well, I don't like the nosiness of the Southerners. That bothers me a lot. In New York City, especially New York City, you're raised to sort of be anonymous. Even staring somebody in the eye feels like a violation. These people will walk right up to your window and listen outside of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Real nosy.
Well, they'll do that in small towns up north, too. And the small town thing dominates. But no, totally. But what do you think the difference is about, like, the differences between northern blacks and southern blacks? Because I have some thoughts on that. But what do you think?
I think that the biggest thing that bothers me and that stands out to me is the southern blacks seem to have some kind of fear towards white people, where not only does that not exist among northern blacks, but especially in cities like New York, where I don't know about the majority, technically in numbers, but we're definitely, you know, not cowering in fear of oppression in any way. So the attitude is very different in the South. When I see a southern black going, yes, sir, with that look in their eye, I just want to choke them.
Well, white people do that, too. I mean, I say yes, sir, to people. I mean,
there's a difference with old southern black. There's a look in their eye that's almost worse than a yes, sir.
Yeah, okay.
There's a look in their eye that's like, if I don't say this just right, something bad will happen to me. And I'm like, nothing's going to happen to you. Look that man in the eye.
Yeah.
But that's a difference that happens. But that's a subtle thing. That's a subtle thing.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah. What
the level of articulacy is a little different.
Well, what they did is it was the Jim Crow stuff, and what they were trying to do is not ship all the blacks back to Africa and let them have kind of their own enclaves. But when they came into white enclaves, they were dominated. They were looked on. And
we're dominant people. That's why we shouldn't be with y'all. We're dominant by nature in a way that it's not comfortable for white people to be next to us. In a way, we're very comfortable. We'll talk loud, slap each other on the back. You do that, some white people know just, bug out. So that's another reason why, we might need to be separated and have our own space so that we can laugh loud and slap each other on the back and do African things without somebody in the corner being afraid and calling the cops when we weren't doing nothing but socializing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the major problem comes from being stuffed into the same box.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I would include Martin Luther King or Michael King, rather, on that list of clowns. What do you think about Martin Luther King?
I don't put him on that list, no. I think that he was a gentle guy, just like Gandhi was a gentle guy. There might have been a Malcolm equivalent in India at the time of Gandhi, I sort of put them on the same page. Like, that's not that. I think there's a little too much ass-kissing that can maybe damage our cause. And if anything, that's the only criticism I have is, it was a little too gentle. They should have, been a little more like Malcolm.
Well, he was an integrationist. He wasn't like Gandhi in this way. Gandhi was pretty much an anti-Semite, and Malcolm X was
suck-ass.
Martin Luther King.
And fasting for change and things like that. I'm not sure that's effective.
Well,
but it was let me tell you something about Martin Luther King. Is everything I'm saying right now, he has already proved me wrong. He's already proved me wrong. You can sit in and cause change. You can ask nicely. You can boycott. And the methods that he used are still effective today. When blacks boycott today, things change. If we didn't have Martin to give us that standard, we might jump to violence first thing instead of jumping to boycott first thing. So
I don't think boycotting will work, and I'll tell you why.
Already worked.
Yes, but it worked on an integrationist slant. You see, integration was sold as something that was good for business. And that's when something really starts happening politically. And that's why it's money. And that's why when the blacks started boycotting, it hurt the bottom line. So things changed. But I don't think you would be able to have blacks and whites boycotting on the basis of a racial separation.
No, that's not going to work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But So, yeah, so it's not going to be a boycotting thing.
It's got to be, everything has to be catered to,
was an absolute,
you know,
fraud. Martin Luther King was chosen by white people for black people. He was the progenitor of Jesse Jackson and Clown Jesse Jackson and Clown Al Sharpton. He was
the only thing that makes me disagree with that. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he was a communist, a communist and a communist sympathizer. He wasn't good for anyone. He was an integrationist, and that's why he was chosen by the powers that be over folks like Malcolm X.
Then why'd they have to kill him, huh? Why they don't kill people unless they're a threat. And Martin must have not been following the rules, have been some kind of threat. If what you say is true, why would they have killed him? And the other thing that makes me say none of that is true and that Martin was working for black people is the way that he hurt white people was in a way that white people don't want you to play with them, and that's with their money. And he went right for the jugular. And no white person would have set up a black man to cut their bottom line like that. Not possible.
Yeah, I mean the King family doesn't believe that James Earl Ray shot Martin Luther King. Did you
I don't know believe that?
That
either. I don't believe that either. I think the government, just like with Malcolm, had everything to do with those murders. And not to say necessarily they pulled the trigger, but they could cause the environment, encourage somebody else. There's a lot of different ways they can pull the trigger without pulling the trigger. But I think they definitely pulled the trigger on Martin Luther King because he was not doing what they wanted to see done. It was hurting their pocket. And that's not anything but a black person. Black people want to hurt white man's pocket right off when they get mad because we know it's effective. That's not something that a white group would establish a black man up to do, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe, but a Jewish man? I mean,
no.
Jews
it cut the dollar. It cut the dollar. You can cancel Jew out before white when it comes to cutting the dollar. Way before white.
All right, we have somebody. Hang on one second. We have someone calling. Oops, they are. I can't take it. Let's see.
I feel like I've been talking too long and my phone's getting hot.
Your phone's getting hot. Maybe it's burning up with. Hey, here's something. Here we go. I do have a PM on the forum, and this is I think this is a little better. They say, great show. Thank you very much. I applaud you for having crypto on. Forget the BS comments. This is the first time I've ever heard an intelligent black nationalist, and I really like her. I don't believe every fact she's presented, and for the record, I don't either. But I cannot... I believe you probably think you're telling the truth, but I would happen to know for a fact that it would work out differently. But, you know, we can agree to disagree.
We do that a lot.
Let's see. Yeah.
That guy rocks. Let's hear some more from him. Who is that?
I don't know. It's a name I've never seen before, so I'll hold back. Hold on one moment. I'm going to have someone on to ask a question, and okay. It says it's going to put you on hold. I guess you can only...
Good evening.
There you are. While I'm while she's on hold, do you want to go ahead and ask a question? And what do you think about tonight's conversation, actually? I want to ask you a question. I'm getting a lot of flack on the forum, and that's okay. I can take it. Bring it on. Send me all the hurt mail. That's cool. I guess I'm a masochist. But what do you think? Am I full of it?
Most definitely. And I mean, I've given black nationalists a chance to talk, and I've had these conversations with other black nationalists. Being a white nationalist myself, it's a whole lot of preaching to the choir, and a whole lot of us have heard it before. And quite often, she does come off with some of them stereotypical social Marxist comments, you might say. So.
Well, yeah, I think she's definitely... deeped in on that a little bit, but you know.
I wanted to reiterate something that happened on the other show.
Yeah.
And talking about sanctions against black countries in particular last week, and I wish we had her back on the line, quite frankly.
Yeah, I'm actually working on it, and I think she's listening to the stream as well, so But yeah, I'm working on getting her back on.
So, but I have tendency to find that a lot of people, even though they say they're a nationalist, still have tendency to think in a global point of sense. And from there, last week they brought up the point of sanctions against black countries, but being able to function independently is functioning independently without regards of outside intervention such as aid or whatever. I mean, and these black continents, they have absolutely produced nothing as near as I can tell. I'd like to reiterate that again, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, I don't agree with the criticism that has everything to do with it has everything to do with colonialism. Colonialism is always blamed for this stuff. You know, they weren't doing anything before colonialism, would be my rejoinder. Are you there? Okay.
Yeah, I still hear. As a matter of fact, yeah, I try not to leave dead air. It takes me a minute to compose my thoughts.
No, it's fine. Dead air's fine. If you've ever listened to Free Talk Live, we're okay right now with dead air. We're all amateurs here, sir. But I think I'm trying to invite you to a conference call, perhaps. And I think that's what I need to do. All right, this one's 3 minutes long, and we'll be right back.
Very good.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver.